even bought a girl a drink. Not last night, or the night before. Was that the source of this ache in her chest? Or was it that she couldn't fathom any more time passing before she could see Katie again? She began typing a message to Katie before she could change her mind. Weekend getaways were for couples. Cassidy never took a girl away unless it was to circumvent a nosy spouse or girlfriend to keep from getting caught with someone else's other half. "Let's go away this weekend," she wrote, and then waited. Chapter 15. Katie woke up to Cassidy's text, read it, rubbed her eyes, and read it again. "Let's go away this weekend." She sat up in bed and stared out at the morning light through her curtainless bedroom window, unable to will her fingers to text back a reply. Leaving the city with Cassidy seemed like a surefire way for Katie to trap herself in a situation she wouldn't be able to get out of if she wanted to. Weekend getaways didn't make for easy escape plans. Katie climbed out of her sheets, one barefoot at a time, and carried her phone to the kitchen. There, she was met with the onslaught of Tuesday night's dirty dishes still lingering in their caked-on grease. She pushed aside her cutting board and a few dried-up lemon rinds to clear a place on the counter for her phone. Yawning, moving at a snail's pace, she pulled a mug from her cabinet and poured herself a hot cup of coffee. She drank it standing up, still half asleep. They would probably have fun if they went away together. It didn't have to be some huge commitment. What was she so afraid of? Why was she considering her escape options when Cassidy was obviously focused, as usual, on enjoyment, on simply having a good time? It didn't have to be some weekend sexcapade, either. The two of them hadn't even had a real conversation since they had slept together. Maybe that night was just a one-off, a one-time indiscretion. Maybe Cassidy would say, "Hey, it's good we got that out of the way. Now we can really be friends." Maybe that's what Katie should say, that whatever it was that had had her all hot and bothered since they'd met was finally out of her system. It wasn't out of her system, but she could say it was. Or she could say nothing at all. Katie understood Cassidy well enough by now to know she had too much pride to push. If Katie pretended the whole thing had never happened, her money was on Cassidy's leaving it alone. Besides, Cassidy seemed to have lots of women at her disposal. She did need to add Katie to her collection. She could probably take or leave ever sleeping with Katie again. So what was the harm in taking a trip? A trip might be just the thing they needed to work out all the kinks. No, to work out all the knots in their relationship. Katie picked up her phone from the countertop and texted back, "Where'd you have in mind?" There. She felt better already. While waiting for Cassidy's reply, she opened the fridge, and there sat her lemon-roasted chicken in its juicy roasting pan. Katie yanked a piece off the bird with her fingers, closed the fridge, and ate it leaning against the counter. Snacking on cold chicken at 7 a.m. while wearing nothing but underwear and a t-shirt was something you could only really do when you lived alone. She had forgotten about such perks. Her phone chimed with a text then, and Katie wiped her fingers on her bare thighs before picking it up. "Anywhere," Cassidy had written. "I'll take you anywhere you want to go." Katie brought her phone and her coffee cup to the table and sat, hugging her knees to her chest. Where did she want to go? It was an essential question. The problem was, Katie wasn't so great at knowing where she wanted to go. Keeping up on places to go and things to do was Paul Michael's domain. He and his group had such strong opinions on what constituted cool, Katie had figured out early on that it was better for her not to try to make suggestions. She could still hear their voices in her head. "That restaurant is so cheesy. That bar is so basic. That music festival, that hotel, that city is so over." Katie chuckled to think of it now, and that was probably a healthy sign. It was better to find it funny, the preposterousness of her trying to fit in with them, than to mourn her wasted effort or agonize over her misjudgment. The caffeine was starting to kick in, thank goodness. The morning jitters Katie always woke up with began to settle, and the world, even her cluttered kitchen, took on a kinder hue of bearability. Her thoughts started coming to her with more clarity, better light. She asked herself again, where did she want to go? What Katie had truly been longing for was to go riding. She missed how free and alive she felt while riding a horse. But how would Cassidy react if Katie recommended going to some ranch upstate? Would she think horseback riding was unsophisticated? That a ranch trip was bumpkin-ish? Katie couldn't really see Cassidy reacting that way. In fact, all evidence pointed toward the opposite. Cassidy seemed to enjoy the moments when Katie's accent broke through, or when she laughed too loud or cussed with gusto. Not once had Katie felt self-conscious around Cassidy, or like she needed to restrain herself in some way. So screw it. Katie spun off her chair, went to the fridge, opened it, and pulled off one more shred of chicken. The time for pretending to be someone she wasn't, someone supposedly better and more refined, was over. Cassidy wasn't one to try to smooth down Katie's rough edges. She didn't care if Katie wasn't perfect. Cassidy herself was a living, breathing fuck you to appearances, a walking middle finger to doing anything just because someone told her to. How else could she make her way through the world otherwise? It was downright liberating to be around. Katie swallowed the last of her coffee and reached for her phone. The decision was made. They would go, and she would pick out the place herself. Chapter 16.
I still don't understand why you can't come out tonight.
Gina plopped down on Cassidy's bed, bowl and fork in hand.
Especially now that we know our nights at the Met are numbered.
Cassidy stuffed a pair of socks into an overnight bag. I told you, we're leaving at the crack of early tomorrow morning. Can you please go eat that in the kitchen?
You're making me eat quinoa. The least you can do is let me ingest it on your bed. Explain to me again where the hell you're going.
Horseback riding. Cassidy debated between two nearly identical chambray button-downs, holding one up against herself in the mirror, then the other. It's like a ranch or something upstate. I wanted to take her away for the weekend, and this is what she chose. She's from Kentucky. She likes horses. What do you want from me?
What is up with you and this girl, see?
Nothing is up with me and this girl, Cassidy said. I just like her.
Enough to go to some fucking dude ranch? You know there's going to be dust there, and dirt, and mud, and flies? You're doing all this for what?
Cassidy chose the shirt in her right hand, freed it from its hanger, and folded it into a neat square. I like spending time with her.
Just tell me one thing.
Gina fished through her quinoa bowl to locate a chunk of chicken.
Has she laid a finger on you yet?
Would you say raw denim is the way to go? Cassidy asked. Or would a cotton blend jean allow for more flexibility?
That's a no. Gina said. And it's gonna stay a no.
Cassidy examined her footwear choices. It's not about the sex to me.
But it's only about the sex to her.
Gina set down her bowl on Cassidy's nightstand.
Until she gets it out of her system and meets a nice boy.
Can't you just let me enjoy this? This isn't my first straight girl.
But this is your first rodeo.
Cute, Cassidy said. Gina moved to the bed's edge and brought her feet to the floor.
Look, we both know none of those other girls meant squat to you. Are you seriously telling me you're not falling for this one?
Fine. Cassidy threw her hands up at her sides. I'm falling for her, okay? Of course I am. I don't want to spend my weekend riding horses. But I think she might be falling for me, too. Gina shook her head.
For someone so smart, see, I swear sometimes you've got shit for brains.
Cassidy pulled up to Katie's apartment building in the silver Dodge Ram pickup she'd rented for the occasion. She honked the horn at Katie out front, exhilarated by the sight of her snug flannel and blue jeans, her brown boots up to her knees, and her ponytail gleaming in the sun. Katie approached the truck, opened the passenger side door, and hoisted herself inside.
You rented us a pickup? Where do you think we're driving to?
Too much? Cassidy asked.
Nah, it's kind of great.
Katie buckled her seatbelt.
I lost my virginity in the back of a truck just like this.
Cassidy pulled away from the curb, antsy to break free from the city street traffic for the open road. Since they'd slept together, she had longed for this release from the late nights at their hectic jobs and the torture of separation, this escape into the wild.
I see you tried to wear your most rugged outfit.
Katie leaned over to inspect Cassidy's ensemble.
But I'm pretty sure Chelsea boots are supposed to stay in Chelsea.
You look nice, Cassidy said. You've got sort of a farmer's daughter look going on.
You like it?
I do. Cassidy returned her eyes to the traffic ahead. So what was his name?
Who?
The boy you gave it up to in the back of a pickup truck.
Katie laughed. Justin Barnes, quarterback of the state champion Lafayette Generals.
Christ, Cassidy said. Was he as milk-fed as he sounds?
Oh, yeah. He could have been the poster boy for the Milk Does a Body Good campaign.
Katie reached into a plastic bag at her feet.
But it's crazy to think of it now, how I planned it for months ahead of time.
She pulled a pumpernickel bagel out of the bag and held it up for Cassidy to see.
Want one? I've got butter and cream cheese.
To give him your virginity? Cassidy waved off the bagel. You planned that out?
Katie tore off a piece of bagel and popped it into her mouth. On prom night in the back of his truck under the stars.
Sounds romantic, Cassidy said.
I thought so.
Katie switched on the radio.
I remember lying there, looking up at Orion while he was, you know, pumping and bucking or whatever, thinking, yes, this is right. This is all happening exactly as it should.
Katie toggled through radio stations until she found a song she approved of.
He thought we were going to get married. Before I left for college, we were at Jimmy John's, and he was all fidgety, barely touching his sub, and then all of a sudden, he reached into the pocket of his windbreaker and presented me with a promise ring.
Hold on, Cassidy interjected. At the Jimmy John's?
At the Jimmy John's. Katie nodded. He held out this ring to me in his thick, rough fingers with their chewed-down fingernails, but I wouldn't take it. I reminded him that I would be off to UT in the fall, and he said, that's why it's a promise. So I said, I'm sorry, but I can't promise you anything.
Heartbreaker, Cassidy said.
He didn't take it well.
Katie helped herself to a sip of coffee from Cassidy's travel mug in the truck's cup holder.
He stormed out of the restaurant and hurled a ring across the parking lot. He never spoke to me again after that.
Cassidy felt a sudden and unexpected empathy toward teenage Justin Barnes. So really, you got proposed to twice? She reached over and tore a piece of Katie's bagel for herself. Once at the Jimmy John's and a second time. I assume Paul Michael chose a more elaborate way to ask for your hand.
Are you kidding? Katie said. Paul Michael couldn't take a dump without being elaborate.
A nub of bagel lodged in Cassidy's throat. She washed it down with some coffee.
I hope you don't mean he proposed to you on the toilet.
Worse, Katie said. At a fancy brunch he put together. I preferred Justin's way, to be honest. At least it was sweet and sincere. True to who we were at the time.
Katie fiddled with the radio some more, switching from some soulful, aching song by Adele to something upbeat and twangy by Taylor Swift. Paul Michael's proposal was all about exhibiting the fancy diamond ring he got me to all his friends. The whole thing was curated. It was... I don't even know how to put it.
All for show? Cassidy said.
Katie nodded. I would have preferred for him to propose with a ring pop. Jerry, because he actually cared enough to remember it's my favorite, you know? Cassidy kept her eyes on the road ahead. Paul Michael didn't get me, Katie said. We didn't get each other. I'm starting to think a lot of our relationship was just about... She let her voice trickle off.
Appearances? Cassidy said.
Katie crumpled her bagel's white deli paper into a ball and tossed it into the plastic bag between her boots. You know what? We're giving Paul Michael way too much airtime. She turned up the volume on the radio. When we should be focusing on our song.
Cassidy laughed. We already have a song?
This is our song, Katie said over the blaring music, by Taylor Swift. We can make it ours if you want to. She leaned over and sang into Cassidy's ear. Cause our song is a slamming screen door, sneaking out, late tapping on your window. Cassidy and Katie arrived at the ranch, a secluded stretch of wooded acreage and sinewy trails around noon. Cassidy stepped down from the truck's running board, stretched her legs, and took it all in. Man, this place was rural. Gina wasn't kidding. There was a lot of dust here. And flies. They trudged uphill to a log cabin lodge where a hefty middle-aged woman sat behind the check-in desk, knitting a wool scarf. She looked up, bright-eyed. Hi, Cassidy said, and the woman's expression altered in a way that Cassidy was all too familiar with. We booked the private cabin. It's under the last name Price. First name Cassidy. The woman set down her knitting.
ID,
she said. Cassidy handed it over. Katie, perhaps sensing the tension, turned up her warmth. This is such a beautiful place, she said. Are you one of the owners?
I am, the woman said coldly.
She placed a set of keys onto the counter.
Out the door to your left. It's a 5-minute walk down the trail.
Thank you.
Cassidy took the keys and led Katie back outside. She could see the confusion on Katie's face, the dimmed light in her eyes, and it occurred to her that Katie had never been so quickly sized up and disliked before by anyone. They walked down to their cabin in silence. Cassidy unlocked and opened the door.
Rustic, she said upon entering. What's that smell? Is that what hay smells like?
I don't think that woman liked us, Katie said. Cassidy shut the door behind them.
She doesn't have to like us.
Do you think she thought...
I don't know what she thought, Cassidy said, but my guess is not a lot of people who look like me come around here. That's all.
She assumed we were a couple, didn't she? Katie said.
Probably.
Cassidy tried to sound consoling, but did Katie really not think that was likely to happen? What did she expect?
Don't let it ruin the weekend.
Cassidy took a step closer to Katie. She wanted to put her arms around her, but didn't.
It won't.
Katie walked over to the window and opened the blinds.
I don't know about you, but I'm ready to ride.
I'm ready to watch you ride, Cassidy said.
Katie turned to her. You're not leaving here without getting on a horse.
Katie, the only horses I've come within a foot of have had police officers on top of them.
Don't be a pussy, Katie said. You're getting on a horse.
Cassidy wasn't one to abdicate control easily, and yet she soon found herself following Katie out to the stables, where they approached a white-haired man in a tweed flat cap. Thankfully, his face was friendly.
Hi there, Katie called out to him. Are you Mr. Duncan?
Sure am.
He wiped his palms on his Carhartt overalls before offering Katie his hand.
You can call me Buddy.
Katie Daniels.
Katie shook the old man's hand.
Pleased to meet you. I believe we spoke on the phone.
Yes, that's right. You're the show jumping champ.
Wait, what? Cassidy said.
Got our Dutch warm blood all ready for you,
he said to Katie.
Just like you asked.
Then he turned to Cassidy.
And for you, sir?
Cassidy stuttered. This is my first time.
Oh, boy. All right. No jumper for you, then.
No, certainly not.
Katie came to with a forced smile. We'll both start with some nice and easy trail horses for now.
All right, then,
Buddy said.
Will the mister need a lesson?
No, Cassidy answered for herself. That's not necessary. Katie's face had gone disturbingly red.
I'm an instructor, she said. Used to be, I mean. Fully certified. I'll take care of her.
All righty.
Buddy shuffled into the stable. Katie's cheeks, Cassidy noted, had not yet returned to their normal color. Sorry, she said. That happens sometimes. Are you freaked out?
It's fine.
Katie pretended to adjust something on her boot. Buddy re-emerged then with two horses, one black, one brown.
Zorro for you, he said to Katie. And this here's Cocoa Puffs.
He handed them each a helmet.
Hold on.
Cassidy squeezed her helmet onto her head and turned to Katie.
You get Zorro and I get Cocoa Puffs?
Do you want Zorro? Katie said.
No, that's cool. Cocoa Puffs looks like a total stud.
Actually, she's a mare.
Katie showed Cassidy how to take the reins and guide her horse toward the trail.
Nice to give me the heads up that you're some riding champion or whatever, Cassidy said.
Back home, we're a dime a dozen, Katie said. And that was a long time ago.
Were you bullshitting him about being an instructor?
Katie shook her head.
I taught for a few years, summers during high school.
You're just full of surprises, aren't you?
They walked till there were no other people around, and no sounds but the wind in the trees and whinnies in the distance.
Okay,
Katie said. Ready for your lesson? You really expect me to get on this thing? Cassidy eyed her horse from nose to tail. Can't we just keep walking them like this, like big dogs?
Lesson one, Katie said. Getting on. I want you to stick your left toe in the stirrup and put your right hand on the back of the saddle to hoist yourself up. Then swing your right leg over the horse's back. Once you have one leg on either side of her, sit down gently and put your other foot in the other stirrup.
Cassidy did exactly as she was told, proud of succeeding on her first try, then immediately sorry.
Holy shit, this is high up. I don't like this. I'm going to fall.
You're not going to fall, Katie said.
But she seemed poised and ready to catch Cassidy if she did.
Be confident or she'll sense your fear, and when horses get scared, they run.
Fantastic.
Katie took a few steps back.
Now you're going to make the horse walk.
Do I have to?
Cassidy gripped too tight to the reins.
You have to relax, Katie said, and move with the horse. Sit up tall, shoulders squared, heels down in the stirrups. Keep your eyes focused ahead of you between Cocoa Puff's ears.
I think you could just call her Cocoa for short, honestly.
Use the reins to steer, Katie continued. Move the left rein left or the right rein right in a motion like you're opening a door. To slow down or stop, pull back gently. Got it?
Cassidy stayed very still.
I think so.
Good.
In one swift motion, Katie was up on her horse.
Let's walk together, she said. Follow me. To get her to move, hug your legs around her and rock forward in the saddle.
Cassidy did as Katie said, and to her amazement, Cocoa Puffs began taking steps forward, following just behind Zorro.
The horse seemed to know what to do, so Cassidy tried to do as little as possible. In a few minutes, she calmed down enough to recognize how beautiful this was. The landscape, the day, Katie.
"This isn't so bad," she said.
Katie steered Zorro around so the two of them could continue along side by side.
"Want to go a little faster?"
"Okay."
"Listen first," Katie said. "To tell Coco you want her to go from a walk to a trot, you need to gently squeeze her sides with the insides of your legs. If that doesn't work, you might need to give her a gentle kick. But sit deeply, press your legs down, and keep your back tall and straight. Otherwise..."
Cassidy did as she was told, forgetting the part about listening first, and the horse was off.
"Whoa!" Cassidy yelled. "Whoa, stop!"
She yanked the reins, but that only made the horse run faster.
"Heel! Heel! Stop running!"
Suddenly, they were up on two legs, the horse's two hind legs, and Cassidy was flying backward through midair. She landed hard on the ground, while her horse galloped full speed ahead into the distance. When she opened her eyes, she saw blue sky, then Katie bent over her.
"Oh my God, are you okay? Are you hurt?"
Cassidy lifted her head, made sure she could move her arms, her legs.
"I'm fine. I just pulled a muscle trying to break my fall."
"I should have told you to never try to break your fall," Katie said.
"Yeah, thanks for that."
Katie assessed Cassidy's body for injuries, checked for damage to her helmet.
"I'm sorry I made you do this."
"No, this is great. I'm having a great time."
"Let's go back to the cabin," Katie said.
Cassidy sat up slowly.
"What about Cocoa Puffs?"
"I'll have Buddy go get her."
In the safety of their cabin, Cassidy and Katie could finally break down and laugh.
"You flew up in the air so high."
Katie uncorked the bottle of wine they'd brought from home.
"I saw it happening in slow motion."
"It sure wasn't happening in slow motion for me."
Cassidy rubbed at her throbbing shoulder. "It was like I blinked my eyes, and the next thing I knew, I had dirt in my mouth."
"I told you to sit deeply and press your legs down."
Katie brought Cassidy her glass in bed.
"Oh, fuck off," Cassidy said.
"Are you sure you're okay?"
"I'm fine. Just humiliated."
"At least let me massage your shoulder for you."
Katie set down her wine glass on the end table and climbed behind Cassidy. She kneaded her thumbs into Cassidy's tender muscles.
"How's that?"
she asked.
"That's very good."
Cassidy closed her eyes and tried to relax.
"Can I ask you something?"
"You can ask me anything, except to get back onto a horse ever again."
Katie's hands came to rest on Cassidy's shoulders.
"Why didn't you correct Buddy before, when he called you sir?"
Cassidy reopened her eyes and turned around. She adjusted herself on the bed so that she and Katie were face to face.
"Sometimes it's just not worth the trouble."
"Does it bother you?" Katie asked. "When people call you sir?"
"Not really." "Does it bother you?"
Katie fidgeted with the hem of the plaid bedspread.
"Do you wish you were a man?"
"Would you rather I were a man?"
"I don't know,"
Katie said. Cassidy tried not to flinch.
"I appreciate your honesty."
"I didn't mean that to sound..."
"No, I'm serious," Cassidy said. "I want you to be honest with me."
"This is me being honest."
Katie leaned in and kissed Cassidy gently on the lips.
"The rest is me trying to understand."
Katie was a portrait of coziness in her outdoorsy attire, framed by the knotty pine walls, but Cassidy could see she was struggling.
"Are you trying to understand me?" Cassidy asked. "Or you?"
"I want to understand us," Katie said. "But I also just want us to take our clothes off right now and not think about any of it."
"I want that, too." Cassidy reached for Katie's flannel and drew her in. They should talk about this. Of course they should talk about this. She undid Katie's top button. Katie complied by reaching under Cassidy's shirt. She ran her fingers across Cassidy's taut stomach. "You know how you felt out there on the ranch?" she said. "Like you were out of your element?" A trail of goosebumps followed the path of Katie's fingertips upon Cassidy's skin. "That's how I feel with you." She traced her way down Cassidy's hip bones. "I don't know how to touch you." She glided her fingertips down the inside of Cassidy's thigh. "But I want to." Cassidy kissed Katie's neck, took her earlobe into her mouth. She whispered into Katie's ear, "I'll show you." Chapter 17. There was no polite way of putting it. Cassidy had fucked Katie's brains out. Katie's brains were lost in the mess of sheets or somewhere on the cabin floor, while the rest of her continued lying there, naked and spent, flat upon her back. "I didn't know my body could even do whatever that was," she said. Cassidy sat propped up beside her, her long legs crossed at the ankles. "That last time?" "No, the second time. Where were you even? It felt like you were in me up to your elbow."
"Not quite," Cassidy chuckled.
"And then that last time..."
Katie sat up, closed her eyes for a moment to reimagine it. How she had her hand full of Cassidy, and Cassidy had her hand full of her, and she hadn't thought she could come again since she'd already broken her all-time record with that second time. But then she felt it approaching, and Cassidy said, "Slow down, stay with me," which was code, Katie realized, for "don't come yet." Katie had never tried to keep an orgasm at bay before. Usually it was a fight to get one to happen, so her first thought was, "Nah, I'm gonna go with this, but you do you."
"Stay with me," Cassidy said,
and her eyes told Katie she had to at least try, so Katie did, and their bodies took on a rhythm, like the kind you think of when you think of sex, but Katie felt it this time for real.
"Don't hold your breath," Cassidy said. "Breathe with me."
So Katie did, and it was a slow build of wave upon wave. "Stay with me, stay with me," until the two of them together...
"I've never actually come at the same time as anyone before," Katie said. "I thought that was just something girls pretended could happen to get the guy to finish."
Cassidy blinked her eyes at Katie a few times, but remained silent.
"Did you feel what I felt when that happened?" Katie asked.
"Of course I did."
Cassidy took Katie's hand in hers and rested it upon her own heart.
"Do you feel what I feel right now, for you?"
Katie pulled her hand away.
"I'm sorry, heartbeats freak me out. I don't like the idea of this force pump inside us having to work so hard all the time to keep us alive."
"Romantic," Cassidy said.
"I do feel it, though," Katie said. "I feel the romance."
"Does it scare you more or less than having a beating heart?" Cassidy asked.
"Honestly?"
Katie shook out the rumpled bedspread in search of her undergarments.
"I thought this weekend was going to be about us becoming better friends, that you were going to say what happened between us last week was just a one-time thing, something we had to get out of the way."
"And now?"
Katie located her underwear and slid them on.
"Did you ever have girlfriends growing up? I mean, friends who were girls who you were totally obsessed with? And it seemed like no matter how much time you spent together, it was never enough?"
Katie grabbed Cassidy's chambray button-down from the floor and put it on.
"You know that high-strung, excitable bond that a girl could only really have with her best girlfriend?"
"Yeah," Cassidy said. "I've had that."
"What happens when all of that gets rolled up into the same person you're sleeping with?"
"So you're obsessed with me," Cassidy said.
"I think so,"
Katie let herself laugh. Like schoolgirl, batshit crazy obsessed.
See?
Cassidy reached out to rest her hand on Katie's heart.
You do feel what I feel for you.
On the drive back into the city, Katie's cell phone rang. She had to rummage all the way to the bottom of her purse to find it. That's how much time had passed since she'd last checked for messages. Enough that her Kleenex soft pack and travel size Aveeno had overtaken her phone in the purse hierarchy.
Good Lord, it's my mother.
I didn't return her last call, and she's been really nervous since I've been living alone again.
Cassidy switched off the radio. Pick it up.
Katie pressed answer and turned toward the passenger side window.
Hey, Mama. I can't really talk. I'm driving in a car.
Where are you, Katie?
Her mother's tone was, as usual, equal parts suspicion and anxiety.
You didn't return my call from yesterday.
I'm just heading back into the city from upstate.
Katie made her voice extra upbeat.
A friend and I went riding.
In New York you went riding?
That's right,
Katie said, hearing her own overzealous twang seeking its way back into her diction.
It's like farm country up there, but I'm going to call you later once I'm back home tonight, okay?
Who are you with?
Her mother asked.
Just a friend, Katie said. No one you know.
I haven't gotten a letter from you all month, and now you're not answering my calls. How do you expect me not to worry?
I know, and I'm sorry, but with everything that's been going on...
Every day I go to the mailbox.
I know, Mama, I'm sorry, but you're breaking up something terrible. I can barely hear you, so I'll call you later when I'm home, okay? Bye now.
Katie ended the call and turned her phone screen side down on her lap. Cassidy kept her eyes on the road ahead.
Sorry, Katie said.
For what?
Katie wasn't entirely sure.
I shouldn't have answered.
Of course you should have, Cassidy said.
Like all was good, but the euphoria they'd been enjoying had come to a crashing halt. Katie had the sudden urge to throw open the truck door and run, similar to how she'd run off after going home with that random guy she met online, when she found herself in a puddle of her own tears at an abandoned construction site, when she called Cassidy that first time, when this whole thing really got started.
You okay? Cassidy asked.
Yeah.
Katie shoved her cell phone back into her bag.
My mom just gets to me sometimes.
Cassidy nodded.
That's what mothers do.
Katie reached for the water bottle rolling around at her feet, opened it, and drank. She tried to imagine, just for a minute, what it would be like to take Cassidy home to meet her family. Instead, she recalled the first time she brought home Paul Michael. How hard she'd worked to prepare her family beforehand for Paul Michael's erudition. The way he wore only black or gray. His habit of interrupting others. How he didn't eat animals or anything that came from an animal, and that this was called vegan. She'd worked equally hard to prepare Paul Michael for her grandmother's saltiness and her mother's mistrust of outsiders, her father's rugged pride in being a straight shooter, and her brother's tendency to be outright gross. Katie remembered how she felt when they pulled up to the modest brick house she'd grown up in, how she took comfort in its impeccably manicured lawn and welcoming front porch. She knocked on the familiar screen door, confident that she'd laid the proper foundation for all parties, that everyone would play nice and be respectful. After all, her family and Paul Michael shared one major thing in common, and that was Katie. Didn't they all want to see her happy? And yet, the moment her father pointed a forkful of pulled pork at Paul Michael over the dinner table, Katie knew it was hopeless.
"So it's not that you can't eat this," her father said. "It's that you won't."
Her grandmother lit a fresh cigarette with the butt of her spent one.
"What are you, Gandhi on a hunger strike?"
Her mother ignored Paul Michael for the entire visit, and consistently for the next 4 years. She waited until Katie called home to announce their engagement to finally speak up.
I just don't know about this boy, Katie. He makes me uncomfortable.
I love him, Katie had said, and I trust him. He can give me a good, stable life, and he isn't one to stray.
Katie had highlighted those aspects of Paul Michael's character because she knew they would speak directly to her mother's fears, but also because they were true. Katie was sure of it. But her mother had turned out to be right about Paul Michael, hadn't she? What if Katie had simply listened to her mother from the start? How much heartache and wasted time could have been saved?
"Do you want to tell me what's going on in your head right now?" Cassidy asked. "Did your mother say something to upset you?"
Katie loved her family. Her parents were decent, wholehearted people. They just weren't the best about others who were different from them. How could Katie express that to Cassidy without her misunderstanding it as a personal attack? How could she put into words that even now, after years of living in New York and evolving into a fully capable, independent woman, she still struggled with where her parents' beliefs ended and hers began?
"I'm fine." Katie switched the radio back on. "Just tired."
Cassidy tilted her head at Katie in a way that indicated she knew she was lying. Her dark sunglasses shielded the eye roll that Katie was certain accompanied the motion. Katie already knew Cassidy well enough to understand her every tick and gesture for what it really meant. How she scratched the back of her head when she was nervous, snickered when she felt threatened, touched her lips when she was lost in thought. How her eyes got big and round when she let her guard down, and how she blushed when she was caught being kind. The head-tilt-eye-roll combo meant Cassidy was disappointed in Katie's failure to speak her mind, but that she would let it go, and Katie was fine with that.
"Let's talk about something else," Katie said. "What's going on with the Met getting shut down?"
Cassidy thought for a minute. "Nothing's going on with it. It just is."
"Are you freaking out?" Katie asked.
"What's there to freak out over?"
Cassidy kept her eyes on the road ahead.
"Places close all the time."
"But you must be sad. Isn't that bar like your Cheers?"
Cassidy let out a laugh.
"It's where I learned to be gay. I've been going there since I was 19. On a fake ID everyone knew was fake."
"It was the very first bathroom you had sex in," Katie said,
only half joking.
"Actually, no,"
Cassidy smirked.
"But probably the second."
"I guess I set myself up for that one."
Katie unscrewed the cap on her water bottle and took a sip.
"What do you mean it's where you learn to be gay?"
"Why, you interested in getting lessons?"
"Fuck off," Katie said.
"I'm just playing."
Cassidy tapped the top of Katie's knee and then got quiet for a second. She stared straight ahead, trying to give Katie a real answer to her question.
"I guess going there as an awkward kid and getting hit on, like, almost immediately upon stepping foot in the door, it was kind of life-altering."
A hint of astonishment came into Cassidy's voice, but her eyes remained unmoved.
"I guess it struck me," she said, "that I might not fit quite right into the world at large, but in this filthy little bar I was something. I was considered hot. I had power."
Katie got the feeling Cassidy hadn't let this all properly sink in till right now.
"So you must be upset about it closing," she said.
"Even I'm kind of sad about it, and I've only been there a couple of times."
Cassidy shrugged.
"Is there anything we can do?"
Katie wouldn't be deterred.
"Have you looked into the nature of the sale? Is it still pending? Did you check with the register's office?"
Cassidy turned to look at Katie straight on then. She held her gaze for a split second longer than was comfortable, considering she was driving a vehicle.
"I appreciate your solidarity," she said. "But yes, I did all those things. And it's a lost cause."
Katie felt herself deflate in a way that she wasn't sure she was entitled to. This was Cassidy's loss, not hers. The map didn't belong to her the way it belonged to Cassidy and her friends. And yet, the way Cassidy described her first time entering the bar, how life-altering it was, that was kind of what had happened to Katie, too. She remembered how her initial fear of the place had quickly dissolved into a sense of comfort and camaraderie that she had never experienced in a bar before. So maybe Katie belonged more than she thought. Either way, she was taking it personally, how the Met had come to her and was now being taken away. Whether or not she'd earned her membership, Katie wanted to keep going back, and she would miss the place as her own. Just then, some renegade SUV cut them off, and Cassidy palmed the horn. Her attention was diverted to bypassing some slow-moving traffic ahead. She weaved their rented pickup around elderly Buicks and wavering Toyotas, impatient, confident, tailgating up to the very edge of obnoxious. "Sometimes I think you're more boy than any boy I've ever dated," Katie said. Cassidy smirked. "I'm going to choose to take that as a compliment."
Chapter 18.
Cassidy clicked buy and waited for her confirmation number to appear on screen. She wasn't ballsy enough to make this online purchase using her work computer, so she had her personal laptop out on her desk. In the days since her and Katie's trip to the ranch, they had spent most of their time together indoors, either in bed or on the couch, on the floor or the kitchen table, a few times in the shower. In the middle of last week, Cassidy had even snuck out of work early, which she had never done before under any circumstances. Usually she was among the first to arrive in the morning, already neck-deep in documents at her desk, while her associates, junior and senior, filed in. Hours later, she'd watched them file out, texting on their way to the elevators, while she remained at her desk. She knew all the night shift cleaners by name. Sometimes they'd ask about her life as she dumped the contents of her own trash can into the bin. With no kids, no spouse, not much in the way of personal responsibility, she was often at a loss as to what to tell them. "I like to work hard," she'd say. She didn't tell them that this was her edge, her single-minded focus, no one and nothing else slowing her down, that it was her guarantee of making partner, maybe before she turned 40. In her 5 years with the firm, Cassidy had stayed at work with fevers, toothaches, even food poisoning. The time her father had a heart attack scare, she'd headed to the hospital only after she sent her last round of comments to her client. But there she'd been on a random, nothing special night in the middle of last week, plotting an early escape from her desk. The weather outside was perfect. She knew because she'd checked the weather app on her phone. It was an ideal night for a long walk on the High Line, followed by dinner nearby at Santina or Cook Shop, or any place with a cluster of outdoor tables. She texted Katie. "It's beautiful outside. Let's make the most of it. Can you sneak out early?" Katie wrote back, "How early?" "Now? Now? It's not even 7. This was the problem with Katie's being a fellow workaholic. She could be even more of a challenge to persuade than Cassidy herself. "The sun's about to set," Cassidy wrote. "Meet me at the High Line. I'll make it worth your while." Katie didn't write back immediately, a hopeful sign. She was considering it. A full 2 minutes went by before Cassidy received her reply. "You're becoming a terrible influence." Ha! She had her. Cassidy jumped to standing and pushed in her chair, then pulled her chair back out. She decided to leave her briefcase wide open on the floor and her overcoat hanging on its hanger. It was worth being chilly in order to leave the appearance that she'd stepped away for only a moment. She tried to look busy as she fled from her office, down the hall and around the corner, where she bumped right into Hamlin. Of course. Who else would be lurking about the elevators like an insect spy drone? He He stood back and stuck his thumbs into his suspenders.
Already heading out?
No, no. Cassidy pushed past him. She would not be deterred. Just for a second. I'll be right back. She cursed his name all the way downtown, but forgot he existed the instant she found Katie waiting for her on the corner of 23rd Street and 10th Avenue. They ascended the stairs to the repurposed rail line side by side, two dark suits and a narrow parade of jeans and sneakers. When they reached a stretch of green lawn, Katie took off her heels and carried them at her side, hooked from her fingers. In bare feet, she was 3 inches shorter than Cassidy, which for some reason only made it harder for Cassidy to not reach for her, draw her in, wrap her arms around her. They missed the sunset, but the sky had turned an electric blue that set everything aglow. As they continued along a winding, sweet-scented path of shrubs and trees, the light deepened, and they soon found themselves alone, secluded in what felt like a magical forest. Katie stopped and turned to Cassidy. Her eyes were bright with twilight, and Cassidy could feel the pull of her. How did this happen? This impossible, hysterical, hopeless need. Cassidy could almost see them from above, watching herself from the moon or an overhead branch as she leaned in slowly. "Let's go to your place," Katie said. Cassidy came to a halt, shaken from the moment. "What about dinner?" "Let's go to your place," Katie said again. So they were off, rushing through the night, back through the teeming city streets, through the entrance to Cassidy's building and across its watchful lobby, past Frank, then up and into her apartment, door slamming behind them, where finally, at last, they could press together and fuse into one. The rest of the week, Cassidy was a no-show at Metropolis, dodging texts from Gina.
"Where are you? Stop being avoidant. You can't pretend this bar isn't closing."
Over the weekend, she and Katie gave up on leaving the apartment altogether. Monday morning arrived, and it occurred to Cassidy that she hadn't worn shoes since Friday. Which was why here, now, seated at her work desk with her laptop open before her, Cassidy felt the need for a grand gesture. She wanted to take Katie somewhere special that not only required shoes, but also was an event, an experience that would create a new shared memory. This gala at the Metropolitan Opera House seemed like just the thing. Ticket purchase confirmed, Cassidy shut her laptop and slid it into her briefcase. She could breathe again, ready now to return her undivided attention to her work. Chapter 19. The moment Katie settled into Vivian's salon chair and was covered in that familiar black cape, she felt safe in the way she imagined some people must feel at their therapist's office. But Vivian had to be better than any psychoanalyst. She was wise beyond her 26 years, wild enough to never be judgmental, and the lazy D's and dropped R's of her southern Louisiana drawl always put Katie at ease. Katie felt silly for putting off this haircut for so long out of fear. Today Vivian's hair was brown, parted in the middle, and fell past her shoulders in beachy waves. It was different every time Katie saw her, and she seemed to never repeat the same look twice, which was an antsy creativity she also applied to her dating life. Katie had been living vicariously through Vivian's storied adventures for years.
"Same as usual?"
Vivian swung Katie's chair around so she was facing herself in the mirror. "No," Katie wanted to say, "everything is different." But Vivian didn't wait for an answer to begin Katie's usual cut.
"So, how are the wedding plans coming along?" she asked.
Katie let the question hang in the air for a few seconds. She had sat like this and talked to Vivian every 6 weeks for the past 5 years, which made her, to date, Katie's most lasting and consistent relationship.
but she had yet to ever match the shock value of one of Vivian's scandal-ridden stories with her own.
"We broke up," Katie said. After all the anxiety leading to this moment, Katie was surprised by how the words left her mouth now like an easy breath. Vivian laughed.
"I'm totally serious."
Vivian's calm went still. She studied Katie's face in the mirror.
"Oh my goodness, you're not joking."
Her scissors came down at her side.
"Are you okay?"
Katie nodded.
"I'm great, actually."
Vivian brought her usually untamed voice down to a Southern Comfort whisper.
"Was it another man?"
"Another woman," Katie said.
"He cheated on you?"
Vivian said, some of the spice returning to her speech.
"And you're this together right now? I knew you had some bounce to you, Katie, but sweet baby Jesus!"
"It's kind of funny," Katie said. "I don't really miss him. I mean, I thought I'd miss him more than I do. Instead, I feel like I'm learning what I like to do now."
Vivian's comb and scissors returned to their task. She was working on automatic, temporarily dumbfounded.
"Like if I never go to another art opening for as long as I live," Katie said, "where I have to listen to some dude talk nonsense about how his arrangement of a bunch of mirrors is a Borghesian statement on perception, it'll be too soon, you know?"
Vivian politely nodded. Katie wanted to tell her more. She wanted to tell Vivian everything. From her and Cassidy's crazy first meeting, to their fast friendship, to their kiss, to their weekend getaway, right up to the past 10 days of sexual bliss. Just running it through her mind, Katie could hardly believe how close she and Cassidy had gotten, how inseparable they'd become in such a short amount of time, how they were maybe falling in love. Katie wanted to try out the words.
"Well, good for you."
Vivian seemed to click back into place.
"Best thing now," she said, "is to not get involved with anyone else for a while. Take some time. Have some fun. Whatever you do, don't jump back into a relationship right away."
Katie watched the split ends of her hair fall from her head to the floor.
"Yeah," she said, "you're probably right."
Vivian snipped, combed, snipped.
"So tell me about your latest dating adventure," Katie said.
Vivian went on to regale Katie with her latest escapade with an acupuncturist who picked her up using the line, "I can't wait to get my needles into you."
"He's a little freaky," Vivian told her, "but my lower back pain has never felt better."
By the time Katie stepped out of the salon, freshly cut and styled, she was convinced there was little an hour with Vivian couldn't make better. She was also newly certain of how impossible Vivian's casual attitude toward dating would be for her. If taking some time to have fun, not getting involved with anyone too seriously too soon, required a willingness to be some weirdo sexual pincushion, well, forget it. Katie walked west till she hit 6th Avenue, where the street was closed for a food festival. Tents and tables displaying everything from dinosaur-sized turkey legs to handmade ice cream sandwiches lined both sides of the sidewalk. Cassidy was supposed to come over later with takeout, but Katie couldn't resist trying a free sample or two before heading home. Katie scanned the offerings, homed in on a vendor giving out Dixie cups of artisanal beef jerky, and was making her way over when she caught sight of a familiar-looking shark fin faux hawk alongside a purple do-rag. It was Gina and Becky. Katie's first instinct was to turn the other way and bolt, but what if they saw her seeing them? She couldn't chance such a rude gesture, so instead she urged herself to continue forward.
"Hey there,"
she said, once she was just beside them.
"Well, hello."
Becky smacked Gina on the shoulder.
"What are you doing here?"
"Just passing through," Katie said. "You?"
"Our friend has a booth."
Becky nodded toward a table where a woman with asymmetrical bangs and tattooed forearms, whom Katie could have sworn she'd met before, was slinging fried fish cakes shaped like baseballs.
"You should check it out," Becky said. "Best fritters you'll find outside the Caribbean.